Okay, it's Bruce Tonkin speaking. We'll commence the meeting. We have here physically present in Amsterdam, we have myself, Bruce Tonkin, we have Ken Stubbs from the Registrars, we have Philip Gravensi from the Registrars, we have Roger Cacchetti from the Registries, we have Tony Holmes from the ISTC constituency, we have Lawrence from the IP constituency, we have Philip Shepherd from the business constituency, and we have Marilyn Cade from the business constituency. Online, we have Jordan from the registry constituency holding a proxy for Karen Carr. We have Jade Scott from the IP constituency holding a proxy for Ellen Shankman. We have, and that is it, correct? Okay, the first item of the agenda is to approve the agenda. The agenda consists of a discussion on the transfers, task force final report, a discussion on the who is task force final report, a discussion on the budget, and then just approving the schedule of meetings for next year. Do I have any changes to that agenda?
Just one item. I'd like to make sure that we allocate enough time before the meeting is over to deal with an administrative legal issue having to do with the transition from the DNSO to the GNSO before the meeting. And so you could add that as
okay, I'll add that at the end.
That was Roger for Chetty's.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Okay, the next item is to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Do I have a proposer to accept the minutes from the last meeting?
I move that we accept the minutes as presented by the Secretary.
Okay, a seconder for that? Philip? Okay, all those in favour of accepting the minutes from the last meeting say aye.
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 Aye. Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, note the minutes is approved. Now the next item on the agenda is the Transfers Task Force report and recommendations. The Transfers Task Force produced a final report on the 30th of November, and that contained a number of recommendations for new consensus policy. I posted a note to the council list a couple of weeks ago suggesting that the next step in that report is to carry out some further implementation analysis before providing a final report to the board, probably the end of February 2003, ready for the board meeting that will be held in Rio de Janeiro at the end of March. So at this stage, I'll really just open the matter for comment from each of the constituencies to sort of get their views on the transfer's final report and on the suggestion that we do some further implementation analysis and add it as an appendix to that report before forwarding it on to the board for approval at the end of March. So I'll open it up for any that might want to speak on this topic.
One thing I'd like to do is read a very short comment that was received from the at-large organizing committee, which has just come in this morning, that I think would be just really useful for people to know. The at-large organizing committee commends the efforts of the transfers task force to improve efficiency and security of the GTLD domain name transfers and to ensure concerns and interests of registrants are addressed. And it goes on then just to make some statements about the importance of the process, and that the ALOC members welcome the opportunity to lend further support. They'll be providing it electronically. They, of course, were able to meet here yesterday, and there'll be a similar, very short statement on who is. But it's something that had not been able to be submitted for the record, and I want to be sure that the names council was aware of it.
Okay, we'll incorporate that comment into the final report to the board. Okay, anyone else want to speak to the Transfers Task Force report? Roger?
Well, I think the registry constituency has some concerns about the process at this juncture. Obviously, the subject has been under discussion for a while, and we appreciate that. But this particular report was issued on November 30th and then updated on December 12th. It's been our feeling from the outset, and I think we've made pretty clear that whenever the council takes up a matter of this importance, the constituencies need adequate time to, in some cases, translate it into different languages, but in all cases, to consult with their members and reach conclusions about it. The task force process of the Names Council was never intended to replace the Names Council itself. Participants on task forces presumably represent the interests of their constituencies, but it is the Names Council that has the final responsibility under the bylaws to sort of address the question of policy. So it's really at the Names Council level that you get the full constituency consultations. In this case, with the report issued on November 30th and then modified on December 12th, we think that the subject deserves enough time for the constituencies to have full consultations. So we're concerned on the procedural aspects of it. I think it's perfectly reasonable for us to discuss the report today and to share views on it, but we're concerned about going beyond that.
Okay. Anyone else want to speak on this?
Anyone on the call want to talk to the Transfers Task Force report? Jordan or Jay Scott?
This is Jay Scott. While I can appreciate Roger's concerns, I guess I find myself struck with the duplicity of his concerns in the fact that so oftentimes I hear from his constituency as well as others that one of the problems with the Names Council is that we never get anything done. We never move forward. We never complete anything. And it's been a huge criticism and was one of the impetuses, if I remember correctly, for Stuart Lynn's suggestion that we reform the process of policy development and the ICANN process in general. And one of the tenets that every party that made comments seemed to universally agree about. And now we're at a juncture where it's time to move forward, and I hear we need to delay. So I guess we're strongly criticized on one hand for taking no inaction and being involved in inertia constantly, and then when we're ready to move forward, we're always accused of ramrodding things through with inexplicable speed that is far beyond the ability of anyone to react. So I'm not sure where the Names Council finds itself in finding a delicate balance that seems to be the perfect answer to all of these concerns, if in fact they are truly and legitimate concerns. And that would be my comment. I would like to say that from the intellectual property constituency standpoint, both the transfer and the Who Is Task Force reports, the task force have done a great job and have taken on a tremendous amount of work that I myself, having not participated, and as Names Council member, do not believe I would have had the ability to do on my own, nor would I have been willing to do, and I appreciate their efforts. And I think that we need to move forward at this point.
So what would you propose, Jay Scott? Would you propose that we vote on adopting the report, or would you vote on adopting the report and then also include some further work on implementation analysis?
I believe that the implementation analysis is more than likely going to be vital in order to give the board a direction which they can work towards in a in what I believe would be a constructive manner. I do believe that any implementation report needs to be focused merely on implementation and not on policy review or policy criticism. I think that what they are to do is to give us a real-world analysis of the implementation of the recommendations that have been set forth in the report, and that their goals and structure needs to be narrowly defined. And I do believe it needs to be attached to the addendum. I do believe it needs to focus on registry and registrars who will implement the particular policy recommendations, but I believe that any implementation analysis also needs to include thoughts from other stakeholders who will not only have to implement, but have to be the users of the particular policies as they're implemented, or the and so I think that, yeah, I do believe we need to move forward. We need to create an implementation working group that would have a narrowly focused agenda, you know, giving a real-world analysis of how this is going to be implemented and what costs would be associated with doing so, both to the registrar and registries and the user community, and that needs to be an addendum to the report that goes to the board.
Okay, thank you, Jay Scott. Ken Stubbs, next.
Yeah, I think Jay Scott makes a lot of very cogent points. The registrars had a took a poll over the last 10 days with respect to the transfers task force recommendation for the report, and I feel that on balance there was the majority of the people who voted expressed support for the effort. There is concern regarding the implementation, as indicated by Jay Scott. We feel that it's very important that in order for this thing to move forward to the next step, there has to be a significant amount of effort put forth by the constituents who will principally be responsible for delivering and managing the services. So we feel that the implementation has to be an integral part of an implementation report has to be an integral part of any presentation to the board. We do feel that the implementation plan and report needs to be principally managed by the people who will be responsible for dealing with that effort. And it's not a matter of creating policy, but more a matter of dealing with procedures and the technical aspect of it. I don't think, for all intents and purposes, that there's anything that would be any problems at all with participation by other constituencies in terms of reviewing the implementation plan, but I guess from a practical standpoint, if I am a user of commercial space, I do not necessarily feel that I have to be there with the contractors and the engineers in developing the plan for making sure that the space that I'm occupying is structurally sound and capable. The most important thing is I give them a set of parameters that I need to have in order to be able to occupy commercial office space. And if I have electricity, if I have safety, if I have heat, I rely on them to develop a system that gives me what I need in order to live with. If there is a review of the implementation plan by the parties who will be principally using it as the end users, I think that's the important thing. But the development of the implementation plan has to rest principally with the people who are responsible for providing the service to the end user. Thank you.
Can I?
Madam, go ahead.
Now, as the chair of the task force, I would like to speak on this issue. I'd first like to check and see if Grant Forsyth has been able to join us.
Hello, Marilyn, it's Grant here. How are you?
Good, Grant, thanks. I wanted to be sure that other members of the task force who are named council members were also able to join us. And there are also task force members who are here in the audience, and I want to note and recognize the participation of the transfers task force members in what has been a significant work item. So I want to say, first of all, as chair, how much I appreciate the work that all the members of the task force have done.
I'd like to make one other comment, though, about appreciation. Throughout the work of the Transfers Task Force, yes, the Transfers Task Force has benefited from the support, participation, and consultation with members of the constituencies. We've held open conference calls where registrars and registries have given us their time and their participation. We've heard from members of the community who are individual registrants about the experiences that they've had. We have heard from resellers who have shared with us their experiences with their upstream providers who might be called registrars. All of that consultation has been documented in the report. However, one of the important elements that has not yet been provided has been what I would call an implementation issues assessment analysis. And I think that the proposal to add in that step that could result in an appendix or appendum to the report would be an excellent addition to the report and would augment the report that's sent forward by the Names Council. So taking the policy recommendation and adding in this additional consultation, I think would be an excellent addition. I would offer one comment about timing. I think that needs to be concluded by the end of January so that we can make sure that we do get this put forward for votes by the board in March.
Okay. Yes,
yes, I want to say again what James Scott mentioned, but I just would like to stress that it's very important for us that the implementation committee is, if there is one, is not a duplication of the work of the task force and is really dealing with implementation. The task force, it's true that we didn't have also a lot of time. I mean, I was not in the transfer task force, but speaking for the WHOIS, for instance, we didn't have a lot of time. We would have liked to have 3 months, 6 months to deal with each issue, maybe, but it was not possible. However, regarding the consultation process, each constituency were represented in the task force, and I believe everything we said during those meetings represented the views of our constituencies and not our personal views. So the process, true, it went quite fast. The consultation period could have been longer, but still members were supposed to attend the meeting and to provide the views of the constituencies as well.
Can I respond to and put me after? That's the spirit in which I'm looking at it as well. I'm not talking about creation of policy. I'm talking about implementation. The policy that's been developed, and there's a big difference. But I think Ram Mohan used a very excellent example in an email that I saw where he talked about developing plans for a building. Now we have to make sure that the plans that we've developed are capable of being, that the building's capable of being built. And if there are any issues or any problems, as hard as we've tried to address them, this has been a dynamic process all the way through, with input all the way through. But the one thing that we haven't done, and I think we would agree, is over the last 30 days, there's been a significant amount of additional work that's been done and refining. We now need to make sure that the final product that we take to the board is capable of being implemented on a practical basis to the benefit of all constituencies from that standpoint. And if it can't be implemented practically, then there's no use in writing a law if it can't be enforced. Same idea. So.
Okay, Roger.
I just wanted to comment and in particular on some of the points that that Chief Scott made, and say first that I want to express my agreement with Jay's comments and with the Maryland's and Ken's and others on several very important substantive points. Clearly, as a council, we need to be concerned about sort of getting on with things and not endlessly dragging things on. And clearly, anyone who's familiar with the subject understands that the implementation is absolutely essential to any understanding of what's going on, and thus the council can't knowledgeably decide what it's doing until it understands the implementation aspects of it. So these are all, I think, very valid points. My point really had more to do with the integrity of the Names Council and the integrity of the Names Council process. We have before us today a report that's dated December 12th. Today is December 14th. The report is either 42 pages or 63 pages long. I'm not sure which. But I'm not sure how many members of the council can say that they have read the December 12th version of the report. I'm not sure how many members of the council can say that they've referred the December 12th version of the report to their constituency for discussion or comment. And if we can't say that, then it's not clear to me how we can say we are prepared to act on it. I don't, as I said from the beginning, think there's any reason we couldn't or shouldn't commend the task force and discuss the report, but and Jay, to be clear, I would take this perspective, I think, on any matter coming up before the council, you know, that involved anything even remotely close to policy with you know, with the that's of this length and this timetable. So it's really a question, I think, of the integrity of the process. And preserving the integrity of the process more than anything else was my point.
Okay.
Just before you respond, could I perhaps ask the chair of the task, this is the Transfers Task Force, to just explain the difference between the December 12th report and the November 30th report?
I'm happy to do that. What I would also suggest is we do have task force members here who could respond in more detail.
Sure.
And that probably would be good for us to do quickly because that might actually get the particular issue tabled very quickly.
Absolutely. Feel free to invite whoever you'd like to respond. I think it's important we just understand if there has been anything substantially changed.
And I think the word here needs to be understood as substantial changes. So let me summarize by saying that the crux of the report, the main principles of the report, have been in the report since the early publication of the report. Minor changes have been made to the report, and we have added in a couple of, we've also added in the comments that have been received. But I might turn to Ross and then to Grant to summarize in a little bit more detail any changes that are substantive between the interim report and the final report. Would you do that, Ross?
There's really two material changes to the report.
Can you just come close to the bond?
Close to the mic.
Unusual practice. For those on the phone, there's some kind of never mind.
There's really two material changes from November 30th to December 12th. One of those being a summary of the comments received during the public comment period, during the index. And the other, I believe, was the, correct me if I'm wrong, this wasn't it, but the impact analysis received by the registered constituents
right.
On the 3rd.
That's right. Which did not meet a committed date that it had been in order to be put into the interim report, although a commitment had been made to provide it in time. So we did add it in once it was received, feeling that, of course, we wanted to accommodate the submission, even though it was late.
Bruce?
Yes, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I take into consideration, Roger, in the registry's comments, but I do want to make it clear from a registrar standpoint that we are anxious to move forward with the transfers issue, that we do not necessarily feel at this point in time that we have the issues with the time period concerns that have been expressed by the registry. We do not always move in parallel with everyone. So we did want to make it clear that we do feel that the registrars feel that it's time to take the transfers and move it forward. Where our concerns are implementation, not policy development from that standpoint at this point in time.
Could I ask a question then, Bruce? If the concern agencies that want to make sure that implementation issues are fully explored. It seems to me that the process that we could move forward with, and maybe we could just sort of, from the chair, as the chair, I would put this forward as a proposal. Approve the policy, direct the establishment of a fast-track implementation issues identification working group. We'll have to make up some sort of interesting acronym for this. That would be primarily composed of registrars and registries, staffed by ICANN staff, and with some liaison participation from the existing task force. Move forward and then come back to the Names Council for acceptance. So policy is approved, the implementation issues working group does its work, the two are put together, there is a final acceptance and forwarding resolution at our meeting in February in order to meet the deadline.
Yes, we have a meeting, teleconference scheduled in February, yes.
And that would, in essence, enable the completion of the work of the task force.
Tony?
Yeah. Can I just say that? I think that there has been broad involvement, from the constituencies, so I find it hard to say that we need more time on that, particularly when there's a general acceptance that all policy development needs to be speeded up. So to stand back now and look at policies in a broader way doesn't stack with that very well. I do accept that there has to be more work on the implementation analysis, and I think also that there must be some linkage back with the work of the task force within that. So the idea of having some people engaged with that, I think, is a good one. Roger mentioned that we mustn't challenge the integrity of stuff, and that's key. But at the same time, bringing it back into the Names Council provides a gatekeeper to ensure that doesn't happen. I believe the safeguards are there, and the essence should be on speed of getting this second phase done in as short a time as possible. And maybe for February is something that seems doable and viable.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Okay, well, where I understand things are at the moment, if we look at the transfers report, the recommendations have not changed since the report that was published on the 30th of November. Prior to that report being published, the members of the task force would have liaised with their constituency, so there's no new policy recommendations in that transfers task force report that haven't already been discussed within the constituency, so we're not looking at something new there. And that is a final report which has also undergone extensive public consultation since the interim report, which was published for the meeting in Romania. So I think there has been adequate time to look at the core recommendations that are in that report. The 12th of December modifications basically consist of including further comment and some impact analysis, and we need to do further work in adding a implementation analysis to that report anyway, before we approve forwarding it to the board. So what I would suggest is that if a member of the Names Council would like to propose a motion that the Names Council accept the policy recommendations that were in the Transfers Task Force report, that the Names Council approve the formation of a implementation analysis committee which incorporates the registries and registrars, plus representatives from the task force, and the purpose of that committee is to look at how to implement those policy recommendations. The purpose of that committee is not to create or change those policy recommendations. If there are any changes, they would be put back to the Names Council, and the Names Council would most likely ask the task force to comment on any changes to policy recommendations.
It's Grant here. I would be very happy to move such a motion.
Could I offer a friendly amendment to that motion?
Yes, go ahead, Joe Scott.
I would just request...
Sorry, can we have a seconder for the motion first?
Ken Stubbs has seconded that motion, Joe Scott.
Thanks, Ken.
I would just like a friendly amendment that would request that any liaison between the WHO is, I'm sorry, the Transfers Task Force and the Implementation Working Group would be members of the user community, given that the Implementation Working Group is going to be predominantly registrar and registry representatives.
Yes, I think that was for Jay Scott to approve. Sorry, who's Grant to approve that amendment?
Bruce, you proposed the motion.
No, I haven't proposed the motion. You proposed.
Well, I thought it was wonderful. I thought the in your articulation, you said that the implementation committee would be largely, as I recall, representatives of the registry and registrar constituencies and representatives of the transfer task force. With that mix, Jay Scott, I would suggest that the representatives of the task force would be other than registries and registrars.
That's
given
exactly
that the mix on the implementation committee, if that's what it is, has already been noted to be largely registries and registrars. Does that make sense to you, Jay Scott?
Yes, and I understood that. My question is, I want in the resolution are in the motion a recognition that in fact the transfer task force liaisons or members of the committee, the implementation committee that would serve from the transfer task force would be from the user community, given that.
Oh, yeah. A wonderful friendly amendment, and I so accept.
Just want to see
if
we get acceptance from the seconder of that motion.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mara.
I just want to be very clear that the resolution that we're voting on includes the following outcome. Accepting a report is not the same as approving a report, and I want to be sure that I understand that the motion that is on the table results in approving the policy recommendations of the report.
Actually, Bruce, can I make a comment to that effect?
Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah, I think actually, I thought actually Bruce's phrasing was quite wonderful in that I think it allows the concerns that the registries have expressed in terms of timing to really be subsumed. I think if all we're doing today is accepting the work of the report and then allowing the implementation group to do its work and gain a full appreciation of any issues that may be associated with the policy process, then when they come back and we have a final report that includes those implementation guidelines, that's something that A, will have given us fully adequate time to make sure that we have a full understanding of these issues and have a full understanding of what is, I think, a very long document, and allow us to you know, make such approval at that time while in the interim accepting it and allowing the implementation group to do its work. I think that that, you know, accepting now with the intent of approving once the implementation task force, the implementation group has completed its work, I think is a position that essentially satisfies the concerns that Rogers raised earlier.
Bruce, can I speak to that?
And allows us to push forward.
Okay, Grant, go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a subtlety being made here which is not too subtle, and that is the question as to whether the principles and policy as articulated in the Transfer Task Force report, whether those policy directions are going to be accepted today. And I think they certainly do need to be accepted and approved prior to any further work being done as to their implementation. To only accept them but not approve them and send off a group of people to develop an implementation on as yet unapproved policy, I think would be a shocking waste potential of that implementation group. So I do think, and I think this is the point Marilyn was seeking clarification on, we do need to ensure that what is being determined here is that the Names Council is accepting of the policy principles as contained. report, which, as Bruce has noted, have not changed since whenever the previous, in fact, and since presented in Bucharest. So I do think the Names Council needs to, one, accept the policy principles and proposals of the task force, and then, two, acknowledge that the next phase and a useful phase is to develop the implementation and such that the two, the policy and the proposed implementation, can be put to the board for their adoption.
Okay,
this is Jay Scott. I just want to make a point of order before we go through all of this. Do we have the necessary quorum to take a vote? I hate to be the picker of nets, but I just want to make sure that before we go through all this discussion at this point, that we can actually take a binding vote at this point.
I'm pretty certain we do, with the proxies included.
Okay, I just wanted to clear that up real quick.
Look, that's a good point, Jay Scott. To go back to the wording of the motion, the wording I used was fairly careful. I used the word accept the policy recommendations of the Transfer Task Force report. So I'm being quite specific. We're accepting those policy recommendations. There will be a work from the implementation analysis process, and then we will approve the report for forwarding to the board. I think I'm not saying we're just accepting a report in the general sense, Grant. The wording is accept policy recommendations, but we're not actually approving a consensus policy until we've finalised the entire report for forwarding to the board. So that's the specific wording I've used.
I just question you on that.
Yes,
is it your thought within your wording that there is a possibility that somehow in the implementation considerations there would be thought that the policy as articulated in the Transfer Task Force report, the policy might alter?
My view there, Grant, is if as a result of that implementation analysis there is the suggestion that the policy might need to alter, that would require separate approval.
And where would that consideration of policy modification to what has been proposed by the task force,
I would suggest, Grant, that if and this shouldn't happen, because the purpose of the implementation analysis is to create the analysis on those policy recommendations. However, if part of that analysis concludes that any particular recommendation is not practical or is not implementable, then that group might suggest that the policy be changed in some way. If that was to occur, that change would need the approval of the Names Council, and the Names Council would seek the advice of the task force before changing any policy recommendation.
So can I just be quite clear on this, Bruce, from a process point of view?
Yes.
In forming an implementation analysis group who will go away and seek to, as it were, structure and give life to the policy as documented in the report. If through that process the implementation group determine that in their view the way to give life to some policy requires that policy to be modified, then a request for such modification would come back to the Names Council and hence to the previously constituted Transfer Task Force. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct, yes.
Then if that's the case, I'm reasonably comfortable. My reason for ensuring that we are very clear on the process there is because, to my understanding, the Task Force has been tasked with determining policy.
Correct.
Now injecting a side consideration, which I think is very useful, which is the consideration of implementation. And you're right. If through such consideration there is thought that the policy might be improved through some change, then that's useful. And I'm just ensuring that such a suggestion correctly goes back to the task force.
Yeah, quite clear, though, as Roger has pointed out, it is the Names Council that approved the policy, and the Names Council would seek the advice of the task force on any change to such policy, but it's not the task force that approves the policy ultimately.
Quite right. And then I'm happy with your amendment. Sorry, with your wording of the motion, which is accept rather than approve, acknowledging that the process is, as we've discussed, would be the process and is the process that will be utilised going forward.
Okay.
Was in earlier discussion we mentioned the timing.
Yes.
Was that timing incorporated in your draft?
I can't remember the full. I think we can incorporate that the implementation analysis should be completed by the end of January, and the objective is to approve the final what I'll call the board report at the meeting in the teleconference in February.
Point of order, Bruce. We have counsel for ICANN here with us in the room. It might be a good idea
to... Oh, looking over my shoulder.
Yeah. It might be a good idea to ask Lewis if our goal is to move that to the board in order to ensure that the board has the opportunity to consider it within their scope of... within the bylaws, what days are we dealing with here? You know, I mean, when do you have to have it formally presented to you in order for the board to be able to deal with it? Really?
Ideally, 1 month before the meeting in March, which is the end of March
23rd,
something like that.
So February the 20th.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, so the objective is to complete the board report 30 days prior to the board meeting in Rio de Janeiro, which is around, I think it's what, the 23rd or something, but March?
20th.
20th.
On the next council meeting, the 20th.
No, I'm talking about the board.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm
going a month back.
Yeah.
Then that's
yes,
just
that's
okay.
Right.
That's
yes.
Very tight because by history, ordinarily, there's a process that goes on for a few days at least after the Names Council meeting to repair things.
But the objective, without going into the detail of the dates here, is to have a report ready for the board 30 days prior to the ICANN board meeting in March in Rio de Janeiro. What I suggest we do at this point is just break for a couple of minutes just to allow the constituency members to consult before we actually put this important motion to the vote. So we'll just break for a couple of minutes.
Like five minutes.
I think the BC just consulted Grant and we agree with your motion.
And Jordan, are you on a cell phone or a number where we can reach you?
Yeah, you can actually. At 917-496-6543.
917-496 what?
6543.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Harold.
Scott?
Yes.
Carpool, right?
you want to give me the number?
Yeah, it's 00.
40.
For you, it must be 011-32.
Okay.
Lowell?
Yeah?
Jay Scott, this is Steve. I'm here too, but...
Okay.
Steve, I just sent you an email
okay.
with regard to my home phone number, because I'm on my cell phone, and you can call my home phone number,
okay.
and I can talk to you.
Well, do you want to give me your phone number, Jay Scott?
It's 704-841-8902.
Of an and I would like for people to hear this who are in the room. there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity for an implementation team, okay? But it is an opportunity. Should they fail to do their work, I don't want to come into the February meeting and be gamed by this process. So the group is out there. I don't want to hear that they can't get themselves together for a meeting until the 29th of January, and so they can't meet the deadline. It's a hard and fast deadline. If it's a hard and fast deadline, I'll live with it. But if it's a game, I'm so. Seem fair?
No result.
So if people don't do the work,
I'm here.
We've gone down to the fence.
Cameron, are we back yet?
We're just about there. I'm just waiting for the registry. It's the latest delay tactic, Grant. They've left the room, and I'm just waiting to get it back.
Grant, now we're waiting for the dough to rise, Grant.
Moving access to the common to take them to throw away things. It's always needs to be one or two at least people to get that.
But just as from the process point of view, Grant, I'm going to read the motion and then we'll then vote on it.
Bruce?
Yes, Jay Scott?
Jay Scott, I have a couple of questions before we get there that have been posed.
Tell me what time we're reserving.
This is my debate, I can never say.
We had to talk about ski conditions and, you know, what the weather was like at the beach. Nobody said we were going back, so we're all set, Bruce.
Okay, Jay Scott, if I just have everyone's attention again, we've reconvened the Names Council. Jay Scott, you had a question?
Yeah, well, the only questions that have been raised, and it's not really a concern, it's more a question of just having it out on the table. Exactly how do we envision choosing those registrar and registry representatives that would be on the working group or on the implementation committee?
Yep, I think we'll leave it to the registry constituency and registrar constituency to nominate the representatives to form a committee.
Okay, then I would suggest that we insert a date certain by which that has to be done into this particular motion.
Okay.
Can I speak to that point?
Yes, ma'am.
Jay Scott, you may not have heard me raise this point at break, but
I did, and I was hoping you would raise this again.
I would be happy with dealing with it either in that way or in a different way, and that is, I just want a conclusion here that the report must be received, the work must be concluded, the report must be received by the end of January. Yes. And failing to submit a report will not hold up the forwarding of the approved policy recommendation.
But a question only from a practical standpoint. I asked Louis to give us a date. The date that Louis gave us was 30 days prior to the board's meeting in March, and now we need to have a report totally completed by the end of January. I guess I would have to define what you mean by that. I respect Jay Scott's concern, and I think the most important thing is we need to work towards a specific date, but let's make sure that the date is totally practical. If it's January 30th, that's one thing. If we make it 10 days later, it seems to me that doesn't impair our ability to consider the report for the Names Council meeting and still transfer or present the report to the ICANN staff for tabling.
I think we're talking about is the report from that implementation group being available by 30th of January. That will then be formed into the final board report. And in the Names Council meeting in February will be to vote and approve that final board report before it goes to the board. It is at that point when that final board report is approved that it becomes a consensus recommendation from the Names Council. So just understanding the steps. So I'll read the motion out as it is currently. That the Names Council accepts the policy recommendations in the Transfers Task Force report of 30th of November, that the Names Council will form an implementation analysis committee to look at the implementation of these policy recommendations, which will comprise of representatives from the registries, the registrars, from ICANN staff, and user liaisons from the Transfer Task Force, that the Implementation Committee will complete its analysis by the 30th of January 2003, that the Names Council will then meet to discuss the final board report in its meeting in February, and the final board report will be forwarded to, with the aim to forward that board report to the ICANN board 30 days prior to the meeting in Rio de Janeiro.
And let me just ask one question here. Right now, we have you have to need a minimum of 14 days prior to name council. So I was working backwards again on the 30 days to say there's got to be a short amount of time. The report's been received. It has to be put together, then put back out to the name council at least 14 days prior to our meeting on the 20th.
Yes.
That's fine.
Okay.
Good.
You're
in January, is all right. Yeah, I think we can adjust the meeting. And you might, your motion might benefit from defining what that report is in terms of topics and then key the date when that report is delivered.
Bruce, can I always want to...
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, the fact that we're going to have a couple of liaisons from the task force involved in this implementation analysis team, I think they will have difficulty because we don't have the broad constituency representation in there. They're just doing that on behalf of the task force. So we need to ensure that there's a channel back from into the task force so that the constituencies become aware if during the course of that month there are any potential roadblocks. I think we need to be aware of that at a very early stage. So part of this exercise has to make sure that that's covered off and we have that feedback channel.
Yeah, so basically you're looking for regular reports, if you like, progress reports back to the community generally.
And in particular, any potential roadblocks need to be highlighted.
So identifying problems early. Yeah, I think that's fine.
From a procedural standpoint, I'd like to also point out a couple. There were some concerns expressed about transparency with respect to the implementation committee. My suggestion to help alleviate those concerns would be, number one, to instruct the DNSO secretariat as soon as possible to set up a special mailing list similar to the Who Is list. This way, communications amongst the members of the implementation task force will be facilitated by this list and would be open to transparent. It's important that we give her these instructions immediately so we don't run into a problem in having the list implemented, because with the deadlines you're setting up, we don't want to have a situation where people are waiting around the second week of January because we don't have a list to communicate on.
Yeah, well, that's right. We'll set up a mailing list and ensure that that mailing list is archived. Yeah, sorry.
Bruce, I thought the task force members would also be represented in the implementation committee.
Yes, they'll be. That's in the motion. Yeah,
okay.
There are two user representatives from the task force in that committee. Yeah, and I'll let the task force work out who that's in now. Yeah.
So just pursuing a bit more on the notion of a report.
Yes.
The the description, the motion that you gave, sounds to me like a report ought to be to report upon their findings as to the feasibility of implementing the policy recommendation. Perhaps if you could add into that suitable for inclusion in the existing report, there's a section that could be dropped into, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that sounds fine. So the report will present the findings on the feasibility of the policy, and it will be suitable for inclusion in the report, which will become the board report.
Well, it would be more than feasibility. I mean, be more than feasibility, wouldn't it? I mean, it would.
Yeah, it would create, contain details
of an implementation plan.
Yes.
And the feasibility of.
Well, I think depends what you want to define as plan, because you've got to understand that registries and registrars have got development cycles that may differ. But yeah, certainly in terms of the mechanisms, if you like, for achieving the policy would be described.
Okay.
Yeah, let me just offer a thought though, it's Marilyn. You know, guys, I don't think we're trying to say that this implementation effort would necessarily replace a follow-on work item, and I would just bring this to Louis's attention and ask this question. I think it's very conceivable that still, following the approval by the board, that the board would instruct the staff to pull together.
Because there can be changes in legal contracts.
And I think I just wanted to be sure that that was understood as well.
Yeah, okay.
Just to respond to that, I think that's absolutely right. It's perhaps a subtle distinction, but might be important between assessing whether the policies are feasible and actually figuring out how they'd be implemented.
But I want to comment on Jay Scott's question on feasibility. I do think that it is more than feasibility, because it would be very easy to say something is not feasible and stop there. I think we also want to ask for recommendations of how to achieve the outcome of the policy should barriers be identified.
Yes.
Okay. Bruce?
Yes.
Who's going to be the person that sort of spearheads this effort?
I will spearhead the formation of that committee. I won't chair it, but I will spearhead getting it formed and making sure it happens.
I guess you would be the chair until the committee is formed, and then they elect their own chair. You'd be the interim chair.
That's correct, yes.
Pull it together? Okay.
Yep. Okay, any other comments?
I'd like to call for the question then, please. Let's get it out.
Okay. All right. Okay, then. We'll put it to vote. I'll start then with Ken. How do you vote?
In favor.
Okay. Philip?
In favor.
Roger?
Yes.
Jordan from the registries?
Yes, as well.
And is there a Kerry? Tony?
In favor.
Now, do you hold a proxy?
For Tony Harris.
Yep. And you're voting in favour? Lawrence?
Mm-hmm.
Jay Scott?
Jay Scott votes in favour and also votes Ellen Shankman's proxy in favour.
Okay. So, what did I say? Philip?
In favour.
Marilyn?
In favour.
Grant?
In favour.
Okay, that's everybody.
You, Chan.
Oh, yes. Sorry, John, I hadn't realised you'd join. How do you vote on the motion?
In favour, including my proxies.
And who is your proxies?
Harold and Eric.
Harold and Eric. Thank you. Okay, then I think we have a unanimous resolution. Next topic. Who is?
Bruce, it's Grant Forsyth here. Can I just excuse myself from the Dames Council meeting and wish everyone a very merry Christmas and safe festive season?
Thank you.
Hi, Grant.
Grant?
And Grant.
Hi.
And Grant, you're Philip Shepherd's taking your proxy, I gather?
Yes, he is.
Yes. Thank you,
Grant. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay. So who is task force report? I think we'll probably end up going through a similar scenario. But first, the who is task force produced their report on the 30th of November. It contained some specific policy recommendations that related to the accuracy of who is, and also related to the use of bulk who is for marketing purposes. It then foreshadowed further policy work, and my view is that any further policy work from the Who Is Task Force would be conducted subject to a new terms and reference for that policy work to be approved, but we won't do that in this meeting. The purpose of this meeting is to discuss the current policy recommendations that are in the Who Is Task Force in relation to accuracy and bulk access to Who Is. And again, open the floor for the different constituencies to raise their comments on the who is.
And before we take comments, can we ask whether Steve Metallis and other members of the task force are on the phone?
Steve Metallis, are you on the call?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Anyone else on the call?
I just wanted to see if anyone else from the task force was on the call.
Is there anyone else from the who is task force that is on this call?
It we have another member, Thomas, is with us. And I think so we may have the ability to offer questions to the task force.
Okay. Where do we want to start? Roger, you usually have a comment.
Thank you, Bruce. I was just hoping I wouldn't have the first comment, but I'll be happy to make, and I'll try to make it brief since it's identical to the comment I'd made at the opening of the task force report on transfers. We have before us a 46-page report that is dated November 30th. It is December 14th. It seems to me it is timely for us to commend the task force on their work, to evaluate the work of the task force, and to take it up for action at a future council meeting. That does not mean that we support delay, procrastination, avoiding issues. It does mean that the integrity of the council is such that our value to ICANN and to the community is that we assert that we can manage a consensus process. And in this case, the report puts forward that a consensus exists in two areas. I don't know how many constituencies can say that they've taken the November 30th report and vetted it fully with their constituencies in the past 2 weeks, but we believe the subject has earned adequate time so that we can preserve the integrity of the council when we do say there's a consensus and be able to substantiate that. So that is completely without comment on the substance of the report of one way or another. Our constituency could be rabidly supportive of the substance of the report or rabidly opposed to the substance of the report. The integrity of the process requires that there be sufficient time to evaluate assertions that there's a consensus in the community, and we're not convinced that November 30th is sufficient time. So it's a purely matter of the integrity of the council's process that's our concern.
Yeah, I might make the comment, Roger, that generally in the new policy development process for the new GNSO, the timelines are even tighter. So
I understand that, and the reality is though that for those of us who live with contracts that can be amended through the policy process, the integrity of that process is not a casual matter. For those of us who live with contracts that can be amended through an assertion that there's a consensus policy, this is not an intellectual subject of, is there a consensus or isn't. It affects our business. So I think preserving the integrity of the process is not an academic subject, I think, particularly for those of us who have contracts, but it shouldn't be for anybody.
Tony.
Yes. Bearing in mind the remark you just made, particularly with regards to the new council and the tighter deadlines, could I ask Roger what he considers would be an acceptable time frame?
I guess the constituency doesn't have a position on that, so I won't try to answer that question on behalf of the constituency. The constituency concluded that a November 30th report that is voted on December 14th was not adequate time to determine whether there was a consensus. But I guess I'd say, speaking for myself, I don't believe we would have a process issue if this came up at the next council meeting, which is January or something like that. I mean, that, at that point, it would have been out for 30 days, and even though it's a holiday period. It is not that the process should be endless or that it should be years or months, but that, our constituency felt that a November 30th report that's voted on with the assertion that there's a consensus on two issues is simply not adequate time. So speaking for myself, I would say, are we meeting in January?
January 16th.
Speaking for myself, I would say January 16th would be, for a November 30th report, would leave 45 days for examination.
I have a question, too.
Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Well, my question is, one, where is Roger trying to find a demonstrative consensus? Within the internet stakeholder community in general, or within his own registry constituency. I mean, it seems to me that we have turned over to the task force the duty of developing a consensus policy within the community. We, as a NAMES Council, have to rely upon the integrity of their work. When they say we've reached a consensus on X and Y, we must assume that they, in fact, did that. Is he saying that the registries are needing 45 days so they can go out and conduct their own straw poll to determine whether there's been a consensus and whether the report, in fact, reflects the consensus? Or is he trying to find out if there's a consensus within his own constituency of how to react to the particular... I just find this, again, very amusing to some point, the fact that this is almost identical to the recommendations that were set forth more than 14 days ago in the interim report. It has reacted to community input it received at that time and pared down particular points it was putting forth as consensus policies and changed its recommendation from a list of consensus policies to two consensus and other issues that must be continued to be explored. So I find it amazing that the registries don't believe there's been enough time.
There's a constitutional issue, Scott, that we kind of glossed over previously, and J. Scott, and we need to address now, and that is, it is our understanding that the council never delegates the authority to manage the consensus process. It refers an issue to a task force, and the task force then reports back to the council. So it's not correct to say that the task force represents the community. The task force does not represent the community. The council represents the community. The task force does the work in developing, examining things, but then it is for the council to examine the question of whether there's a consensus. And the task force assists the council in sort of preparatory work, but we've never viewed task forces as the final arbiter of whether a consensus exists, and if we did, then we don't need the council. Then why even have it come back to the council? You're just simply taking another vote again on the vote taking discussion of the task force. We might as well delegate things to task forces, and they have the final word. The very fact that it comes back to the council is evidence of the fact that the consensus management process rests with the council, and the task forces have a job to do, which is to do the best they can to give the council advice, and the council then examines that, so that the consultative process in its fullest sense begins when the task force puts something forward for the community to examine. Up until that point, it's a matter within the task force where you have input from people who hopefully are knowledgeable of and representative of and sensitive to, but that can't be the consensus process itself, or we don't need to take things back to the council.
I completely agree with your assessment of how the process is to work, and as a member of the NAMES Council, who is reflective of the community and my constituency's representative, I've been aware of this report and their draft implementations since Bucharest some almost 6 months ago today. And I've seen the evolution of this, and except for the evolution of the recommendations they've made to the NAMES Council, the basic substance of those recommendations, at least the two that are reflective in the report as having been able to reach consensus within their group, seems to be still reflective of the report that I received some 6 months ago, and I feel very comfortable. And I also understand that within the constitutional issue, consensus is defined as a two-thirds vote of the NAMES Council. And so we can vote on this report that we've had matriculating through the system some 6 months, and we would have a consensus-based policy to put forward to the board without any further delay at this point, based on my constitutional understanding of how the system works.
Yep. Okay. I think we've had enough debate on the Constitution. Marilyn is next in the queue.
Let me defer to anyone else from the other constituencies who have a question, because I want to put forward a recommendation.
Okay. I think Philip.
Yeah, I was just saying that. I mean, I wanted to support J. Scott's concern there, because I mean, this whole process has not happened in a vacuum. That the very nature of everything we do is that we have an open and transparent process. Everybody has a chance to participate. As things go forward to a final report where it's all put down, there is an iterative process whereby each recommendation, the genesis of each recommendation happens, and we get to know about that. Roger's constituency has had, two representatives on this task force, you know, fully reporting back, we hope, doing a good job, keeping you informed, you know, all along the road, despite how this process works. Bruce told us, indeed, remind us, we're moving into a new situation as from tomorrow, whereby this process and the timelines are going to be tighter than the ones we've been used to. So I think we need to, you know, steel our resolve a little bit here and be mindful of the speed that's necessary, and where necessary, encourage our own people, our own representatives, to be a little quicker in looking at these things now, in order to make that final assessment. Now you've seen those final recommendations in black and white, none of which are a surprise to you.
Yeah. Now, does anyone actually have any comments on the WHO's task force report itself?
The registrar's constituency conducted a vote on the after the final the latest draft of the report was submitted. And with regards to the who is, the majority of the registrars who voted as follows, that they recommend that the task force wait until the next meeting to propose its recommendations in order to provide adequate time for consultation with registrars to determine and to conduct an assessment of the potential cost and the impact on competition caused by the recommendations of the report. In effect, what they're really saying is there are a lot of issues in there. We've had long discussions in the committee, especially in the last 30 days, on implementation issues, especially with regards to the accuracy. We've expressed concerns both in timing, which has been recognized, the 15-day period, but there are also some serious concerns that registrars have with respect to dealing with documentations of corrections made to registrations and so forth. So I think from a practical standpoint, at this point in time, the registrars are not in a position to approve the report as it stands without the opportunity to take a much closer look at the implementation issues here. So that's, just want to let you know where we are.
Okay.
Bruce, this is Jordan, can I jump in as well?
That's correct, Jordan.
Thanks. I'd like to make two sets of comments. One, just very briefly, once again, with regards to the issue of timing. I think J. Scott hit it right on the nose earlier today when he said that there is a delicate balance here and that we do need to understand that it is important to move things forward, but also to keep in mind that it is important that we do have adequate notice to the community and adequate time to review, you know, each report that comes through. I'm not, you know, 100% sure about what the answer are in terms of specific dates, but I don't think it's good enough just to say there's always, you know, transparency and openness, because that's a slippery slope that gets us to the point that every report's released the day before a vote happens and no one has any time to actually review the substance of the report. Having said that, in regards to this report, I do have a couple of substantive comments, and I think to a certain extent some of these may represent the views of the registry constituency, but I'd like to say mostly I'm speaking for myself here in saying that I'd like to first of all agree with the comment that Ken just raised, that I personally continue to have concerns about the 15-day period. I think it's likely to be too short in some circumstances, and I think this is not a particularly new issue. And the second issue is one that I raised in Shanghai that I think I'm concerned with, is that essentially the task force is pushing off work with regards to privacy for some future work effort. But I think that actually the privacy work is the flip side of accuracy. Until we deal with privacy, I think we're unlikely to get as good a result as we'd like to with regards to accuracy. People will always be looking for ways, people that have legitimate privacy interests will be looking for ways to circumvent the system until we have a good way of providing them privacy that they desire. And that's not to say that there's not a lot of people abusing the system today, but I think the issues are so bound up that I'd much rather see the issues dealt with simultaneously than in series, as I think we'd get much better results that way. Those are sort of my personal take. That's a very similar comment to the one I made in Shanghai, so I hope no one will perceive it as being a new objection that I'm raising at the last minute. Thank you.
Jordan? Chun from the non-commercials, do you have any comments on the Who Is report?
Yeah. Basically, I think even in our constituency, we don't have enough time to discuss it further. So I think just now it seems to be a little bit inadequate to decide something at this stage. Because our constituents members are saying that they are inputting some comments on the list, their concerns are not fully reflected into the document. So I'd like to make some comments on their concerns. The first one is, it's very obvious that the concern of individual privacy is not directly undertaken as an issue for this report. Nevertheless, this report is suggesting a set of new uniform mechanisms for the enforcement of accuracy in the WHOIS database. We think we should differentiate our address policies depending on who is to be registrant. In case when the registrant is one individual who doesn't belong to some commercial entity, accuracy policy should be differently applied. Basically, we think for individuals and someone includes political speakers, inaccuracy in WHOIS database should be recognized and accepted. Otherwise, we think the access to the domain name registrant information should be rigidly limited even for legitimate purposes to protect their own privacy. We think accuracy issue in registrant information has close relations with the access policy itself to the database. We think we cannot separate the two things completely here. Basically, different registrants should be treated differently. Here, we think there may not be uniform accuracy requirements to be applied. As a good example, we hope unlisted version of WHOIS registration, like telephone numbers, should be allowed. We think it should be considered, particularly for non-commercial domain name registration. In telephone numbers, neither name, nor address, nor email address, nor fax numbers, nor telephone numbers will be published in unlisted service. This type of service doesn't make any problem, even for the law enforcement mechanism, and is accepted as a common practice worldwide. Some people is saying proxy registration could be one solution responding to our concern, but we think it is not enough because basically in such an optional service, the ownership belongs to registrar or its terms of agreements could be changed later, so it could be finally harm to the domain name registrant. And sometimes registrants don't want to endanger others due to the disclosure of WHOIS information. Moreover, in the case of a domain name dispute case, more urgent response is needed for registrant. Therefore, indirect communication makes another trouble. That's the basic concern of our constituents members, and also our members are proposing the implementation proposal. Basically, we think this WHOIS policy should be carefully undertaken, so we think the testbed period could be introduced contesting its relevance in diverse cases. At the initial stage, commercial GTLDs could be tested and non-commercial GTLDs like .org could be applied later. That's it.
Thanks, Chun. Okay, any other comments actually on the report, Laura?
Yeah, maybe from the IPC.
Yes.
Well, I would like to stress that the IPC believe that the recommendation from accuracy on bulk access in the context of market groups are essential in the context of who is access. And I don't agree on the fact that we should automatically link in the work process accuracy and privacy. I think these are, although those issues are linked in the work process, in the working process, we need to analyze them separately. Accuracy is really important, and I think most all the users group, at least with NICAN, need data accuracy. So I think just saying that the recommendations from data accuracy are not correct enough is just a way to delay the process. And I don't think that such delay will give any value added in the future. Nothing will change. We will have exactly the same problem, the same comments from each constituency in 15 days, in a month's time. Nothing will be resolved. Since Shanghai, I would like to say that we really try to, and correct me, Marilyn, if I'm wrong, but we really try to organize the work in a way that consensus could be found. We focused on two main issues. We could have worked on the four issues that we had found at the beginning, but we really decided to focus on two, trying to find consensus on these two issues and saying, okay, for the other ones where we admit that it's more difficult to find a consensus, let's delay the work, let's discuss more. And I think it was very wise from the task force members to do that. Finally, I would like to stress again that all the constituencies were represented in the task force. So if some constituencies had difficulties, it was up to their representatives in the task force to raise them more. For the 15 days, I agreed with Ken that we had the discussion during the conference call, and that I admit that this is an issue on which we need to find, we need to discuss. I agree with that. But I don't agree that the accuracy issues, more generally speaking, there is a problem. So I'm not in favor of delaying and re-delaying again the process.
Bruce, can I respond?
Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
Yeah. There are a couple of issues here, and maybe it's still a matter of enhancing communication. And if so, all I can tell you is that I've tried as hard to do this, and as such, I also feel the registrars have looked very closely. The principal concerns that they have, I find, are implementation in dealing with corrections, not just the notification process, but dealing with corrections or requirements that are being imposed here with respect to documentation of the accuracy and assessing that involve value judgments. And the classic examples that are always used to point out abusive registrations are great if the address is 123 Main Street and the registrant's name is Mickey Mouse. But when you start getting into gray areas where you require specific judgment in dealing with this, you start adding a significant cost to the process, plus you have to establish some sort of a process that makes sense amongst all the registrars. If not, then what you have is a situation where one registrar's standards are not necessarily consistent with the goals. And I try to use as an example of a situation where there may be a change required in addresses or so forth. And if there's documentation required to support the revision, who assesses the legitimacy of the documentation? I'm sorry, but if you live in Athens, Greece, I have no idea whether or not the new address you're submitting to me is valid or invalid. So I think from an implementation issue, those are minor examples of how the registrar looks at the problem. The registrars recognize that there are serious issues with respect to accuracy. Resolving issues in a way that makes sense, that makes sense economically and makes sense practically for implementation of what we have the concerns of.
Yeah, my comments, this is Bruce Tonkin speaking. I've gone through the report in a fair degree of detail, and I represent a reasonably large registrar one of the issues with the report at the moment is it's quite often the wording is a bit loose and vague, and it's actually unclear just exactly how much work is expected in the sense of verifying that the new details are correct and what sort of documentation would be required. The other thing with the 15-day period is it depends on what the form of contract is. If the email address is accurate but the telephone address is not, then it's pretty easy to send an email to the person and say, please update your telephone number. But if the email and the fax number and the telephone number aren't available and your only mechanism of communicating is via traditional land mail, just the delivery of mail can take far longer than 15 days. So I feel as a registrar that I would like to see more definition in those recommendations before we'd be comfortable with it. So I think that's just a comment from a registrar in terms of looking at how to implement something and looking at what I would call use case analysis, which is to say, how do you correct when there's just one element of information wrong, like an email or a telephone number, or how do you correct when none of the information is correct? Then you've got to think about, well, how does the registrar even contact the person if none of the information is correct? We have procedures that allow someone to contact us. For example, you can put a name on hold and therefore take down the website in the hope that they then contact you. So there's various issues there that we need to look at in terms of what to do if some information is wrong, what to do if all the information is wrong, and what sort of documentation is required, especially across cultures and countries and languages where the documentation standards differ widely. Our expectation is that there would be significant costs, and these costs would be charged to the registrar. So we need to do that in a implementation analysis report. I think, Marilyn, you were next.
Thank you. I want to make a proposal, and I'm going to introduce my proposal with a couple of comments that, again, I would say I've had the honor of co-chairing this task force with Antonio Harris, who is also a member of the Names Council and is not on the call with us today. But I would, each of the constituencies has provided, in most cases, two and in some cases, three participants throughout the extensive work of this task force, who is not an easy topic and is, in spite of the importance of transfers to the registrars, registries, and registrants, who is of even broader impact to the community. The task force's recommendation is that the work on who is will have to continue throughout 2003, and I'll speak to that in just a minute. There is a significant train wreck about to happen for all of us in relation to accuracy of who is data, and that is a strong concern of government and law enforcement about inaccurate data. Data that is today, because it is so inaccurate, not able to assist in law enforcement investigations of criminal activity. Reports from law enforcement indicate that criminal activity involving the misuse of domain names is increasing on a fourfold basis, if not more. Law enforcement and trademark holders are dependent on the accuracy of this data. That is not a comment on the need, and the task force has recognized this, of issues and a mechanism to deal with privacy issues and different national laws that address privacy issues. So the task force suggested that much of this additional set of work needed to go on and that they revise their terms of reference and put forward proposals on how to address that work. Let me come back to what the task force, however, did recommend and suggest perhaps the path forward. In order to deal with identifying some of the impact of the recommendations about enforcement, much of the recommendation of this report is about enforcement of existing obligations. Those obligations exist. They're a reality. We understand from the registrar and registry standpoint that there's a cost impact to them. So a path forward would be to receive the report, which is different wording than the previous resolution, to establish an implementation group of registries and registrars with participation by the task force to assess, in particular, the existing consensus recommendations and the implementation of increased enforcement sections. To conclude that work, again, in a timely enough manner, that the consensus recommendations and the enforcement recommendations could be voted on by the Names Council. This is a different process because it would be voting on it at the February meeting and put it forward to the board for approval in the March meeting. At the same time, the task force would present two impact reports on consistency of data elements and searchability. Both of those will, searchability in particular, will be primarily, we believe, a watch mode rather than moving forward on implementation of other recommendations. The task force also recommends that in the revised terms of reference that we undertake the further work related to privacy and other issues that have been addressed, including recommending a workshop that would involve government participation to undertake some of that analysis. That would give us further work, but a path forward on gathering the additional impact analysis and being able to put that forward at the February meeting.
Yeah, I would suggest you don't include enforcement in that analysis because I think that that's something that can be done just looking at the frames and the time you have available.
Jay
Scott?
This is Jay Scott. I have a couple of comments. First, I'd like to hear from the ISPCPs about whether they want to wait until the January meeting, because if they do, this, whether we do anything now seems to be moot because the majority of the representatives will have said that they need further time to delay. Secondly, with regard to Maryland's last proposal, I'm not so sure I'm in favor of that because this seems to be the task force that never died. It just continually changes its terms of reference, and I think it has to end at some point. Now, if what they do is they say there are other issues that need to be further explored, then the Names Council needs to consider whether it wants to constitute a new task force to consider the issues that they've decided are unresolved. But I do not think this task force needs to continue on. I think it needs to come to conclusion. So that's the comment with regard to Marion's last proposal. And then with regard to whether we need to delay consideration of this task force recommendations to the next meeting, I think we need to hear from the ISPCP.
Yeah, Tony?
Yeah, sure, I can respond to that. And I share much of what Jeff has just said. We've been left in little doubt in our constituency that this task force has created a tremendous amount of effort and work. We're constantly reminded of that. But the outcome, I think, they've achieved does stand up, and we do not favour delays. We would like it to end, and we would like to move forward on the basis that the further work requires a new set of terms of reference needs to be restarted in a different way, and we need to draw a line under the recommendations that have come out of this so far.
Okay, let's just separate the two issues. The issue of the current recommendations in the report that was presented on the 30th of November, my feeling is those recommendations need further fine-tuning, mainly in the wording rather than the intent, and that would come out of doing an implementation analysis similar for the transfers task force. So I would recommend that we basically receive the report, that we form an implementation committee to work with the task force to fine-tune those recommendations so that they are can be practically achievable and include the detailed analysis on the likely cost of implementing those recommendations for registrants. For example, a registrant is likely to have to pay to update their contact details if they're completely inaccurate and they require an extensive verification process from the registrar, just for example. Secondly, on the other topic, I think we would, in terms of going forward on any further issues, we need to, I guess, extract those issues into a simple issues report. We then establish a terms of reference and we create a new task force using the new GNSO process that would involve now certainly some members of the task force could obviously renominate for a new task force, But I think we do need to, as Jay Scott and others have mentioned, we need at any point in time a task force to have very clear terms of reference and very clear issues that they're trying to resolve, rather than just say generally look at the issue of who is, because as others have pointed out, it can go on forever. So I would like to say what the GNSO should do at its meeting in January is look at a new terms of reference for a new task force that looks at some of the issues that have come up out of this report, including things like enforcement. That's a completely separate task force to the issue that we have on the table today, which is looking at the recommendations on the report of November the 30th, doing some further analysis of those recommendations to make them implementable, and that's certainly not delaying the process.
Bruce, if
I've kind of commented.
Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
This is Jay Scott. I'm a little concerned about an implementation committee that would have the authority to change the policy recommendations. I would feel more comfortable with delaying any vote on the report until the next meeting, allowing the constituencies to then put in their comments that would then clarify the policy recommendations. Now, in tandem with that, if we want to have an implementation or an impact analysis group put together that would look at these recommendations and put forth a cost analysis of implementing the recommendations as they're currently written, because I can't believe that any tightening of the language is going to affect it that dramatically from that particular aspect, and then consider all of that, either, you know, consider the report with any input for clarification at the January 16th conference call, and then have on a parallel track impact analysis committee that is moving forward with the impact of that, that would be on a similar timeline to that of the Transfers Task Force Implementation Committee.
Yeah, I'll just make one comment on your comment about the impact. That the wording of some of those sentences makes a difference of hundreds of dollars in terms of registrant costs. Make that quite clear. We have a system where there's not much verification done on registrants. You have domain names that are typically sub $30 a year. Where you have extensive verification, then you're talking about digital certificates, and they're of the order of sub $1,000 a year.
Okay.
So there is very dramatic differences in the wording. But anyhow, go ahead, Roger.
I wanted to support the second of Bruce's two proposals, along with Jay Scott and Tony and others, that I think it would be very helpful to conclude the work of the task force and constitute a new task force that is customized to the current set of who is issues. These are complicated issues. They are interrelated, but they're distinctive enough so that I think we are far better served by creating a new frame of reference for a task force that can focus on manageable things. On the first of your two proposals, the notion that we receive the report and subject it to implementation, I guess the concern I have is that if I heard correctly, and maybe I'm just not hearing correctly, I thought I heard two constituencies indicate that they had lingering substantive issues with the task force report itself. Now maybe, and these were not implementation issues, but they were substantive issues. Now maybe I didn't hear correctly, but the non-commercial constituency, if you could clarify your perspective on this, and thus I'm not clear whether there's further stuff, and I'm not expressing support or opposition as much as I am asking for clarity on whether the process would continue to look at the substance of the report or the implementation of the report, or whether those two are sort of close enough so that they're...
One approach to this, Roger, is picking up what Jay Scott said, in that you allow further comment time, and that the recommendations themselves get analysed in our meeting in January,
okay,
in parallel with doing an implementation analysis, because I think you can do both in parallel. But it sounds like the non-commercials have got substantive comments that they would like to formally submit.
I may have misunderstood, but...
Is that correct, Chuck?
Yeah, our concern is, of course, we have some substantially different idea, but I think it could be undertaken even in the next task force GNSO, because basically we are addressing the issue of the relationship between the WHOIS database and the access policy. You know, if we cannot differentiate the registrants in our policies, I think that policy should have some relations with the accessibility to the WHOIS database. So that issue has not been undertaken in this report. So if we can deal with that concern in the next task force, we don't have any problems at this moment.
Ken, yeah, I've had some people contact me in the last, let's say, in the last 10 days with expressions of concerns on a couple of areas, and I'd like to outline them very briefly so I can give you an idea of where we're going. With respect to the RIA changes, when registrations are deleted on the basis of submission of false contact data or non-response to a registrar inquiry, the redemption grace period should be applied. But, however, the redeemed domain name should not be included in the zone file during that time period. If you have a legitimate business that a registrar is unable to contact in a, let's say, the 15-day time period, this policy mandates that this name be deleted from the zone files, which means, hypothetically, if you're dealing with somebody who's in a part of the world where there are problems with communication, you put them out of business. Now, that's a pretty drastic way of getting somebody's attention. If you have an abusive registration, that's one thing. But what about a legitimate businessman who has it? Now, we say down here further, the details of these procedures are under investigation. How can that be a policy? How is that a policy when you're saying all you're doing is identifying a problem, proposing a potential solution, but you really aren't sure how you're going to impose the solution? And these are the areas that we start running into implementation. I'm concerned because I have clients who are in the travel industry and recreation. They're located all over the world. We need to make sure that we don't inadvertently put somebody out of business because they didn't get the email and it took more than 15 days to get a letter.
May I make a clarification?
Yes, go ahead, Tom.
Since I'm one of the guys with the precise wording of this, I think one of the points which we should pay attention to is that the specific phrase 132 Roman 3B in the policy report, in case anyone is reading it, the precise point is about the redemption rate period. And we are talking about a situation in which a domain name has been canceled. This is the worst thing which can happen due to SA. While consequence of an established material breach of the agreement has happened. The domain name has been canceled. The registrar has sent the delete command. The domain name isn't in the zone file anymore. In that case, we say, okay, if the registrar can somehow convince the registrar that accurate data will arrive, then the registrar can initiate the redemption grace process, which means he sends a restore command to the registry. So the domain name returns from the registry's control, where it is on an automatic execution deadline, into the registrar's, under the registrar's control, where it is no longer on automatic execution. And then what we are saying is, if this process is applied, then the domain name should not be put into the zone file unless there is accurate data. So what this is about is, imagine you have a domain name. The entire inquiry process is possibly in the future, in some future policy, maybe even a host process is there. This is over. The domain name is canceled. It is redeemed. What this recommendation is about is closing a loophole of returning a domain name into the zone file which has been canceled before.
Let me respond very quickly to
Thank you for that clarification.
The only problem is, and I understand exactly what you're saying, but this is not this is not U.S. income tax law where we can look at the House committee hearings behind the enactment of the law to find out what the legislatures really meant when they were talking about it. This is a document that specifically instructs as a policy recommendation that there changes be made in the RAA that specifically state that if a registration is deleted because of non-response here. The wording, maybe it's a matter of the wording, but the point is that when somebody from the outside looks at this, that's what they see. Conversely, if a director of ICANN is going to be sitting here and analyzing this proposed policy, we need to make it absolutely clear the context in which the policy is to be implemented. So all I'm saying is that sometimes there's many, what are the term between a slip of the lip or, I can't think of the exact term. All I'm worried about is we need to make sure that the policy is specific and clear and practical.
Yeah.
It so, can't be...
So taking up that point then, I think...
I need to ask you a question.
Go ahead, ma'am.
You're proposing something that I think I'm not comfortable with, and I just want to ask a point of clarification about it. A major part of the set of recommendations is about enforcement of existing obligations.
But this is not a new policy.
I agree with you, but
enforcement is across anything.
I agree with you. I was, however, I just wanted to be clear that in my proposal, I was also recommending that the implementation process assess the enforcement recommendations, because they're not new policies by any means.
Well, what I would recommend on enforcement is that you actually look at enforcement across the entire space. Enforcement's an issue that happens with transfers, it happens with who is a general issue, and I think you could actually say, okay, there's issues with enforcement that relate to you kind of got it all or nothing. You're either a registrar or you're not a registrar, and you might want to then look at enforcement generally to say, how can I can have some sort of process of penalties or sanctions or whatever that occurs before they lose the registration. That's a much bigger issue than to try to pick one particular item and saying policy 4.9, I've got a specific way of enforcing that. And I hear you.
I'm just trying to understand very clearly I think that the task force's interest broadly is in trying to be responsive to the expressions of concern about cost that the registrars have raised appropriately. The task force has discussed, without discussing price, the appropriateness of cost recovery and the fact that notification processes will incur cost to registrants themselves.
Yes.
I just want to be clear that that we put forward these recommendations about contractual obligations, but we understand that there will be an impact. So if you're suggesting that there's no need for the implementation group to assess these recommendations in the enforcement section,
I'm trying to understand. I'm talking about looking at any of the recommendations that are in here.
Which would start on enforcement of existing contractual obligations.
Which is...
The report you've got.
Yes, agreed, yeah. I read somewhere else in the report where you're talking about specific mechanisms that relate to sanctions, and I was confusing those two things.
I am talking about the
recommendations that are here under that category. Absolutely,
okay. So you are suggesting this would go into the implementation.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what I want.
Just Jay Scott first, because it's on the phone, then
I would like to make a motion that we delay acceptance of this policy and allow an additional time to our next call because it does seem from the discussion that we've just had in the last 5 to 10 minutes there are several substantive issues still remaining that the constituencies seem to need to consider before we can consider approving this particular report. Now, if I would be happy to also include in that motion that we create an implementation or a cost analysis committee that would then look at the cost of implementing the recommendations as they are written and as they may change during the next 30-day period, that would then provide us a report sometime prior to, let's say, February 10th, you know, prior to our February 20th call, that we would then think about incorporating into this report. So that it's like the dual track process that I mentioned in my earlier comment, that we allow more time, 30 more days for consideration by the constituencies of the report that's been put forth and as it's written for the substantive review, but then we start a parallel track along with that that would also begin looking into the cost of implementing these particular recommendations.
Okay, do I have a seconder for that motion?
I second that's motion.
Okay. Do we have any further discussion on that motion?
Well, yeah, so I'd just like to say I don't have a problem with the motion, providing the short window for the report going before the Names Council doesn't get us into a position whereby we start saying that the 10-day period isn't long enough and the whole thing is...
I think
that can be
agreed. To be a little bit more specific in the wording there, your implementation analysis needs to be completed by the 30th of January. That's part of going into the final board report. What we're talking about in terms of the policy itself is if there are any changes to that policy, that should be notified to the Names Council 14 days prior to meeting on the 16th. So from what Jay Scott is saying is that we should vote on the accepting the report of the meeting, which is scheduled for the 16th of January. So then that leaves the next couple of weeks. If there are any substantive changes that need to be made to those recommendations, should be made prior, at least 14 days prior to that meeting.
I'm sorry, I have to do this. When you say, we need to be careful about this language here, accepting the report versus accepting the policy recommendations, at which of these timelines in the future are you proposing that we would accept the policy recommendations?
I'm proposing that on the January 16th meeting, we aim to vote on accepting the policy recommendation.
Okay.
And that allows more time for certainly outreach. I think we need to do better outreach on this in the constituency so that people really understand the implications. And part of that is by forming that implementation committee.
It would have, and so could I just make a request that on the implementation committee there would be identification of registrars and registries who have detailed, practical, technical, behavioral, organizational, and operational understanding so that they can quickly assess the impact of this.
Yeah, add pages 3 to 4.
I'm not trying to be real facetious here, but it's going to be real important that in particular the constituencies put the right people into this.
Yes.
Any other
comments on the motion?
It's my motion. I think that the structure of the implementation committee needs to be identical to that of the implementation committee that has been put into place for the transfer task force meetings. It's primarily made up of registrars and registries, because some registries maintain a WHOIS database, and that it would liaise with user members of with the task force through user members of the task force.
Yes, agreed. And certainly I think the non-commercial constituency need to continue to put their comments into the task force as well, and into the Names Council particularly, prior to our meeting on January the 16th. I think we've discussed
as
far as we're going to get today, so I'd like to put this motion that Jay Scott proposed to vote.
Lawrence had a...
It's okay. I think Jay Scott's
ready.
I'm going to ask if
you please vote, please. Then.
Yeah.
So you're in favour of Jay Scott's vote?
Yeah, as presented and seconded, yes.
Okay.
I'm in favour.
Roger?
Yes.
Tony?
Yes, and yes for Tony Hunt.
Now I'll just go back a step. Jordan?
Yes, I'm in favor.
And Carrie?
In favor.
Okay, Laura? J. Scott?
I'm in favor, and I vote proxy for Ellen Shakeman in favor.
Okay, Philip?
In favor, Grant in favor.
Marilyn?
In favor.
Chun?
In favor, including their proxies.
Okay, we'll note that as unanimously accepted. Thank you all for that one. The final matter, and we are over time, so I won't go into an extensive discussion on this, but in the budget area, I would just ask Roger perhaps just give a very brief report on the budget situation.
I'm going to speak in very general terms for the sake of time, and those of you who would like exact numbers and details, please see me or come back to the budget committee and we'll go over them. But we're about to end, as everyone knows, the DNSO operates on a calendar year, and ICANN operates on a July 1st year for budgetary purposes. Consequently, the DNSO is approaching the end of its calendar year 2002. I've circulated, and will recirculate to the whole council, sort of the year-end financial reports. We have continued problems with receipt of dues payments from several constituencies. But for budgetary purposes, we're going to end the calendar year pretty close to the roughly $100,000 expense budget that the council had approved at the beginning of the year. That will leave us with something like $25,000 of cash reserves at year end that will be carried over into 2003. We've been advised by ICANN management that their budgetary planning is such that that they now plan to pick up the expenses of the new GNSO beginning around the start of their budgetary year next July 1st. And as a consequence of that, we are left with a six-month shortfall. To be technical, the six-month shortfall does not apply to the DNSO, or probably will not apply to the DNSO, because if the ICANN management proposal before the board, the Evolution Reform Committee proposal to the ICANN board is approved, the DNSO will cease to exist as of tomorrow and will be replaced by the GNSO, which is the next subject in the agenda we need to talk about. But for budgetary purposes, the GNSO will then face the first 6 months of 2003 without resources to cover its costs. Again, the ICANN budget presumes that those will be picked up as of July 1st. Consequently, we've been required to look at the budgetary situation for the first 6 months of 2003, and we have two different budgetary approaches that the council needs to decide between today in order to get on with the budget planning process for 2003. The issue is that, in very rough terms, we have two expense budgets, both of which come to a total of about $54,000 in expenses in the first 6 months of 2003. This is a simply continuing level of expenses that we incur today. Our two largest expenses are for FISAT, which provides Glenn's services to us, and AFNIC, which operates the websites, and these would be continuing into the first 6 months of 2003 at the same levels of 2002. And the other expenses are more incidental expenses. But for general purposes, think of the first 6 months as a continuation of the level of spending we've had for this year. The issue is, and I think the Budget Committee is comfortable recommending an expense level of about $54,000 for 2003. The issue is whether or not we want to cover the expenses in 2003 from the cash reserves that we will carry over, and so that as of June 30th, we come close to a zero balance in cash reserves, or whether we want to raise sufficient dues so that at the end of the 6 months we wind up with a continued substantial cash reserves. The differences are, to again, to oversimplify, just cover it quickly, the differences are, I think, twofold. First, if we maintain these substantial cash reserves, we give the council flexibility in approving new expenses, or which basically consist of meetings and teleconferences and things like this. We have the council flexibility to incur new expenses and flexibility to deal with the conditions that would arise if one or more constituencies fail to pay their six-month dues. So the council has greater flexibility if we have higher dues and a cash cushion of $25,000. The alternative is, if we assume that we're going to use the cash cushion to cover our expenses, we have lower dues but a higher risk that we would either not be able to deal with the situation if constituencies fail to pay their dues, or not be able to deal with the situation if we have new expenses that we want to incur. Again, that's an oversimplification, but at a high level, those are the issues. The expense levels in either case that the Budget Committee is recommending are continuing levels of expense, which amount to about $54,000 for the first 6 months. And the dues difference that would arise between the situation if we don't use up the cash reserve, the dues would go up to something like $9,000 for the six-month period. That, by the way, for those who have noticed, this would be on an apples-to-apples basis, an increase from 02 to 03, because in 02 we had seven constituencies, and in 03 we have six constituencies. So you're taking the same level of spending and dividing it between six instead of seven. Or if we use up the cash reserves and assume the higher risk implied in that, the dues would go down to about $5,000 per constituency. So again, these are oversimplified. I can give everybody the details, but the principal issue we need to address today, and if we can get direction from the council on it, and I would ask also that given that the council won't meet again this year, that the council delegate to the Budget Committee the authority to finish the details, but that we propose an expense budget of $54,000 for 03, and the Budget Committee would fill in the details of that, but the main issue is whether we would finance that all through dues, preserving the cash balance, or whether we would finance that by using up the cash balance.
So you're asking for a budget approval for the amount to operate for that time period, as opposed to an approval today on the methodology of financing? Is that it?
Well, I guess what I'm asking for is an approval for a six-month budget of $54,000, which is a continuing level of spending that we're doing right now, and direction from the council as to whether that level of spending should be financed from the cash cushion, the cash reserve that we're carrying over into 03, in which case we'll get back and recalculate the dues, and they will come out to be something like $5,000, or whether we should preserve the cash balance and the flexibility that goes with it, and they will come back and recalculate the dues, in which case they will come out to be something like $9,000. So roughly those are the options, and I'm asking for the Budget Committee to have authority to kind of fine-tune it within those limits.
Fine-tune the
right exact amount. I don't want to try to give an exact amount.
But I think you need some direction from council as to whether you should be raising money in the context of no cash reserve or with.
That's what I did. I think we should really deal with that.
What I'll do is I'll just ask the constituencies to just comment on that particular point, on whether we should operate with a cash reserve, or whether we should operate without the cash reserve, which gives us danger of if a constituency fails to pay, we may not be able to meet our expenditure, which involves people's individuals. And also, if our costs unexpectedly rise, if an unexpected bill comes in from a conference venue like this that we weren't anticipating, there's all sorts of contingencies that you would normally keep the cash reserve for. Perhaps if I just go through the constituencies very quickly. The business constituency, Alan or Philip?
Roger has broadly characterized the two options accurately, but I think it's worth remembering that there's a couple of things. The 54,000 figure had already added a almost $10,000 new amount that we had never budgeted before, which was assuming that we would add in the cost of task force conference calls, which we haven't covered previously. And my view is that was a discussion and something that we should mark for the future, but should not be incorporated in the remaining 6 months budget of the history of the DNSO. We haven't had it before. We also have some new information that with a free telephone conference that we have tested, we know the registrar's constituency of use also and seems to be successful, may mean in fact that we can reduce even the proposed 6,000 budget that we have for teleconferences down to zero. And we have the possibility that where there may be one or two meetings where we can't have that, we're very likely to be able to have some private sponsorship now from a Names Council member, which will also keep that in check. To my mind, that means that we have, that reduces expenditures to, say, about 44,000, which take off that first chunk. If you knock off the existing reserves, we're looking at financing in round terms about 20,000 next year. The figure that gives you 5,000 just about for constituency has a contingency already for 10,000, which is assuming we may have a non or delayed payment by two constituencies by the end of June, which is already 50% of the money we need to finance. If we succeed, and it's very likely, we'll get three calls, and there may in fact be a few more thousand left in the reserves at the end of this year, we've got a contingency then of almost 20,000, which is the same amount that we're trying to finance, which is a contingency of 100%, which strikes me as desperately more than adequate. So we are rather resistant to getting anything more than 5,000 per constituency at this stage.
From intellectual property.
Jay Scott would be able to answer more than your question.
Are you still there, Jay Scott?
Yes, I am. And
okay.
My comment.
Reaching daybreak at your end.
Not yet, but my comment is just this. One, for all of those who are familiar with the American political process, I'm a Republican, so I believe that having the reserves is the better way to go. I'm very conservative when it comes to finances. I serve on several nonprofit boards, and it is devastating when you do not have the reserve funds to handle unexpected contingency. And given the historical problem this organization has in collecting dues, I think that we should note that any unexpected contingency could be extremely difficult to collect for. Therefore, I would support a budget that left the reserves in place and the budget was funded through dues.
Bruce, let me clarify a couple of things. First, I think Phillip's the comment that Phillip was making a moment ago, it was basically saying that the low dues approach, preserving the cash reserve, is not that risky because there is some cushion left into that. So, and I want to make sure that I'm not interpreted as saying that it was an extremely high. There is some the low dues approach, which would eat up the cash reserves, would be sufficient to accommodate at least two constituencies not paying, and maybe more, but then give no new spending flexibility. It's not an extremely high risk approach, but it is clearly a higher risk approach than the approach which would preserve the cash reserves. There's another dimension to this which I think the council should at least consider. And that is, since we are about to turn into the GNSO, we certainly should be giving some thought, and I know we've not finished our work in evaluating this, but some thought to whether or not we want to, as of July 1st next year, give the GNSO a gift of some money so it has some resources to expend outside of the funds that ICANN makes available to it, so that it has the ability to incur expenses that are beyond those agreed to or accepted by ICANN. And to the extent that we preserve the cash reserve, then what that means is that there will be some cash on hand as of July 1st. To the extent that we use up the cash reserve, it means that as of July 1st, we will be either dependent on ICANN spending to cover all things that are done, or have to find some additional source of funds as of July 1st. So I think my own inclination, for most of the same reasons that Jay Scott said, is to be conservative when doing financial planning of this sort, and rather wind up in a situation where you have too much money that you could then use for future purposes, then find yourself at risk. And I say that particularly because we have contractors who are dependent upon us coming up with a monthly payment to them, and it seems to me unfair to, you know, you want to have a cushion against the worst case so that they're never at risk of getting their fees. So my own inclination is to be more conservative, which would lead to preserving the higher cash reserve. But I do want to make clear that what Philip was saying is correct, that the approach that he has proposed is not one that has no cushion. It has a roughly $10,000 or as much as a $15,000 or $16,000 cushion implied in it.
Yeah, my understanding of what Philip is saying is that we would look to reduce costs, which give us that cushion by reducing the cost of the teleconferences. Is that correct?
Well, that's an additional, but yes. My figures had $10,000 for the cushion.
Yes.
But in fact, we could probably have at least $16,000, and perhaps more.
I think one of the critical issues is if we went with the lower numbers, what I would like to see, I guess, is that we invoice as soon as possible and we get those payments in as soon as possible, and then we can review the situation in, say, February to see where we're at, because what we don't want to end up is a situation where we're getting right down to the wire and we've got no room to move, and whether we need to raise additional funds. Any other feedback, Tony?
Yes. I'm not going to talk about the low-cost model and the higher cost. I think it's higher and higher, to be quite honest. And I think when we start going down the path of talking about raising a higher level of funding and giving gifts, then maybe the industry in some sectors hasn't quite had the same results as the pressures on other parts of the industry. And I do support Philip's view that the figures he put forward do provide a level of cushion, which is sufficient. I also believe that some of the recent developments in terms of the phone conferencing aspects and others, potentially other ways we could actually overcome some degree of problems if they arose. And I will also add to that that the Mains Council doesn't have a history of sudden expensive issues coming on the horizon that haven't been planned. But I think we've got ways of accommodating them adequately within that budget. And I support we go for the lower figure, which I believe to be quite adequate with any problems.
Bruce, can I ask for, unless there are a lot of other comments for sake of time, can I ask for a vote on this simple proposition? I'll try to state it very simply. The Budget Committee can do all the homework on this once we get direction. That the members of the Council vote either in favor of using up the cash, which is an oversimplified way of saying use our cash balance to cover operations into '03, or preserve the cash balance, which is an oversimplified way of saying create a due structure that's high enough so that you carry a larger cash balance. And with the direction on that, we can then go back and finish up the details on it. But we need some direction.
Okay. But one way or another, you've got to propose it. Which one do you want to choose to propose?
I was going to say everybody has to choose one way or the other, but I think I've already said, for my own purposes, I would propose that we keep the cash balance and recognize that results in a higher due structure. And so if you want a proposal of that sort on the table as something to vote on, fine. Or you could take the opposite resolution and vote on that. As long as I get direction, I don't really care which resolution we're voting on. So, but my resolution would be that we take the approach of preserving a substantial cash balance with the resulting higher due structure.
Okay, go ahead.
I second that motion.
Jay Scott,
can I ask the question again first?
I'll state it. This is a Names Council resolution giving direction to the Budget Committee preparation of the final budget for first 6 months of 2003, and the resolution, the Names Council directs the Budget Committee to prepare a 2003 budget on the principle of conserving the existing cash balance that the GNSO enters 03 into, to conserve that cash balance so that it is preserved for purposes of flexibility through the end of the budget period.
Let me simply say that the difference between the two budgets in front of us are a planned June reserve of either 15,000 or 40,000. That's where we are today.
Yeah.
You
could say you could take those numbers. Those are illustrative numbers. We don't have the finals, but I wouldn't disagree with them based on what we know today.
And that's assuming that all constituencies pay
That's exactly right. Those are not real numbers, they're theoretical numbers.
Do we need a 15,000 cushion or do we need a 40,000 cushion when we have predicted expenditure
I think we should just, if there's any other discussion on that, we should put it to vote and then we'll see where we get. Any other discussion on that motion?
Some clarity. Those who do support the 40,000 cushion, all I've heard is that there may be something pops up in the year, and we haven't had experience of that. So I just wonder if there's any more clarity on why we need to go above 15 to 40. What is the big concern
obviously, by definition, a contingency or cushion is for unanticipated expenses, but we've got two ICANN meetings coming up, one in Rio and one in Montreal, I guess, and both of these, we could wind up, having to pay the cost of meetings, conferences, television cameras, airplanes, parachutes, helicopters, or you name it. I don't know at this point, but I think I would refer to, I would say that we have two meetings in two locations that could result in unanticipated expenses that we can't exactly forecast now.
Can I just
second thing, we've got the task forces. Go ahead.
There's two elements that come into contingency. There's unexpected expenses or an unexpected loss of revenue.
Correct.
So we're subject to both of those, and history has tended to show unexpected loss of revenue. And this is the IT industry. I mean, it could be that registrars will go bankrupt next year. Who knows? So you can't guarantee that you've got your revenue, and you can't guarantee
you've
got... So I think we need to be looking at a contingency on both contingency relating to revenue and contingency relating
exactly
to
correct. Tony was asking about the expense.
Yeah.
What are the unforeseeable expenses? But the other part of it is you could have both unforeseen expenses and a shortfall of dues payments, which together would put the $15,000 reserve under great pressure.
I agree with that, and it's about achieving balance that's the issue, because you can always take the threats to the extreme and you can cover every contingency but at such a huge cost that it's not
sure. Karen?
What would be the consequence if we discover that this goes as wrong as it possibly could and we would need to undertake contingency action sometime during the course of the next half year?
I think the concern, that's a good question, a logical question, that is why not contemplate a mid-course correction? The issue is that our contractors are dependent on monthly, our main expenses are for contractors who are dependent on monthly payments. If we encounter a revenue shortfall and then institute sort of emergency dues, supplemental dues, experience has shown that the lag time in collecting the money is usually, you know, as much as 3 months, so that you could wind up, sort of leaving your contractors out on a limb where they're not knowing whether they're going to get their money for, the collection period. So it's... There's no case in which the council has been able to collect dues, you know, within 30 days or something like that.
Reserves plus two contingency paying covers all of our contracted commitments up until June.
Two contingencies not paying.
Two contingencies paying. All you need is our existing reserves plus two contingencies paying. The BC is going to pay the moment we get our invoice.
Okay.
And we've covered all of our contractual requirements.
Okay. Ken, very quickly,
and this is the last one, because then I'm just going to put it to vote.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the $15,000 and the $40,000 are impractical numbers because they don't represent reality. There has to be, there's a middle ground in there somewhere. Whether or not people are willing to agree to that middle ground at this point in time is that's a good question, but I think we're voting on two alternatives that are impractical, either in the eyes of one or the other. That's all.
Well, if you want to modify my the committee just needs some direction, so I'll take anything.
I would propose somewhere between 25,000 to 30,000. That gives us a little bit of a pad. It's not 40,000. It's not 15. It just kind of puts reality.
So you want to define the buffer, basically.
Well, you're saying I won't vote for 15, and they're not going to vote for 40.
Yes.
So we're going to end up split close right down the middle. Then we're going to have to find a compromise somewhere. So do we leave the compromise to the budget committee if we can't agree or not?
The budget committee doesn't have authority without direction from the council.
The concept of reserve that is more than 100% of your estimated expenditure is crazy. That's what you're suggesting.
Crazy is
you're getting
the concept
double.
Of immediate payment by all the constituencies.
Look, we cover all our costs if the BC plus one other constituency pays.
Not all of our contracting costs.
All our contracting costs.
Yes, she can't make phone calls. There's no.
I'd like to make
messages.
A comment about this.
Okay, Marilyn,
look, guys. In fact, we are in meltdown in several industry sectors economically, and it is possible that people will not be able to pay their dues. In that case, while that we should have a reasonable and responsible amount of reserve, which I think Philip's proposal addresses, and take into account the fact that if we don't get payments from constituencies, then we may have to make a mid-course correction of either trying to raise more money or cutting out services. That happens in companies. It's happening right now.
Okay, well, let's we can drag this on. I think we should take a vote, and I'm not adverse to accepting a modification from Ken, which is looking at a different way, which is saying instead of a preserve the whole cash reserve, what he's really saying is sort of split the difference or something like that. And I, as long as I get some direction from the council, the committee can finish its work and produce a budget and dues. So
do you want to pick a number then for a cash reserve?
Bruce,
yeah?
I don't feel that I'm in any position to vote on anything other than the two options that are on the table at this stage. So if the figures change.
I'll put Roger's motion to the vote, and we'll see how the outcome of that vote goes, and then
okay.
We can look at it.
Roger.
Yes.
Can we? I need to hear the vote again.
The motion is that the Thames Council directs the Budget Committee to complete its work on an 03 six-month budget, using the principle that the cash balance that is carried into 03 should be preserved as part of a financial cushion during the six-month period, and that the $54,000 of expenses should be covered from dues payments made for the 03 period. That's the motion.
So basically saying the cash balance that
the constituency
is carried through.
The constituency, yes.
So basically you're saying that you're working on a budget of $54,000 for the first 6 months of next year. Whatever
an
cash
expense budget, right?
Expense budget, and you will raise funds to cover that, and then what's left over from this year, which I think is around about $35,000, you'll keep as a float.
Again, the numbers are not clear, but there would be something like that that would carry over from 02 to 03, and that would be preserved as a cushion, as a further contingency cushion in the event that there were shortfall in receipts of revenue,
yep,
or new expenses, unanticipated expenses incurred, or both.
Roger, I need a clarification. Philip is telling me that's $14,000 per constituency. Is that number correct?
No, I don't believe it is.
That's
correct.
That's
no,
where
I'm looking at my name's council paper, though.
Hold on a second.
I think it was saying 9,000.
It's about 9,000 per constituency.
That's right. That's why.
So what is this?
That may be last year's, right?
No, this is
That's on an annualized basis. Yeah, anywhere
this
12
is just
months.
For 6 months.
This is a 6 month. So
yeah.
That the actual 6 month
so
use.
Twice what we were proposing still.
Because you're around about 5,000.
Sorry,
it would be in the neighborhood of 9,000. There would be some reduction from that, given the efficiencies that Philip was describing before that came to the surface since the last discussion. So that, for example, one of the points Philip made is that we've discovered that we could knock off $6,000 from the budget completely, or to cover the cost of teleconferences, so that the real budget would then be reduced from 54 by something like $6,000 as a result of this new teleconference efficiency that was not previously known. So that if you go back, if that's 48,000 divided by 6, which takes it down to, you know, some.
What was your number per constituency?
4,950, call it 5,000.
So you're in about 5,000. So 5,000 by 6 constituencies is basically a total of
30,000,
and Roger's going with 9,000 by 6.
Yeah, but by the way, I can clarify it now, assuming that this new information just came up this morning is correct. The cash conserved approach would be a $48,000 budget, and the $48,000 budget would result in an expense budget would result in a per constituency dues of $8,000. So let me clarify that, and I apologize for coming to this at the last moment, but this really was in the last few hours we discovered that we had budgeted $6,000 for teleconferences.
And I guess the other side of the coin is, if taking Roger's figure of 8,000, Philip's figure of 4,950, if you took my middle ground proposal, which would save approximately $12,000, you would be now at $6,000 per constituency, which is a hell of a lot closer to something that makes sense. So I'm trying to leave the role of the number that even though he may not be in a position to vote, he doesn't feel quite as bad about it.
You're absolutely right, Ken. And what I would like, my preferred way would be not to vote on this now, but I would like to go back to my constituency with what Ken's put forward and discuss that.
First, let me distinguish between everything I've said before. This is not a consensus policy. This is an administrative matter.
Yeah,
so
right, yeah.
I don't mind rushing on, what color the room should be painted. But I am concerned that we need to get our dues invoices out. We need to get moving on a budget that kicks in place in a few weeks.
Yep.
So I don't mind delaying on this like a few hours for a short period of time, but we need to reach a conclusion.
Alternatively, we could just approve a constituency payment, just taking it from that point of view, of $5,000 apiece, and then review the situation in the Names Council meeting in March. So we invoice for $5,000 straight away, and then because we don't know what budget's going to end up at this year, and we're not sure what the state of payment will be, but we would be wanting people to pay that $5,000 by March.
But my reaction to that is essentially what Philip has proposed.
Yeah.
Philip has made clear from the beginning that if things don't come about, then we should revisit it in February, March. And I think that would be imprudent. And the reason I think it would be imprudent is that if we discover we're bankrupt in March, we will not be able to recover until July. We don't have the ability we don't have the ability.
If people aren't going to pay in 2 months' time, it doesn't matter if we're asking for 5 or 9. So I don't see your risk factor is your risk factor in terms of having more money.
Well,
yes, you.
The 9, actually.
I
think we're still in the. I mean, this is just the same order of magnitude. Everything we're talking about, there are no profound differences here. In the interest of time, how about a straw poll? Everyone at the table says a number, 5, 6, or 8, and we'll see if any number comes up a lot more than any of the others.
Any.
We'll know how to proceed.
If I just get a number, we can.
Yes, exactly.
Just try to be real. Bruce, we're not going to get to March and find that we're bankrupt. None of us. We've all got more integrity than ever to let that happen. If we're going bankrupt, we would do something about it before that. So we're not going to sit around the table and say we're bankrupt in March. If that's going to be the issue, something would have happened in the interim. We would have it.
You will not sell pencils.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
What's the carry suggestion? Get a feeling for where
everybody is. Okay, Ken, pick a number. Okay, Roger, pick a number.
Eight.
Wait a minute.
What is it?
Number five.
Six,
no.
Eight is the top end.
The top end.
No.
You pick the number, you've lost your spot. Hang on, sir. You've changed your number to six.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. And Roger's gone with eight. Okay. Tony.
Five.
Okay, Laura.
God, I have no direction at all.
This is not a policy matter, so you don't have to.
A number between 1 and 10.
Yeah. No, it's just 6. I heard it. 8 is the top and 5 is the bottom.
I heard her. Okay, 6 for Laura. Jay Scott.
8.
Okay, Terry.
5.
Okay, Chun.
The minimum is what I want to get.
The minimum number, 5?
5.
Yep. Sounds like a good number. Philip?
5.
Marilyn?
5.
Okay. We have...
Relations to Angela.
Gravity, your number, and Lawrence was
6. Gravity would go with 6.
Gravity would go with 6.
Pardon
me?
It's Jordan.
Hey, Jordan, are you on the call?
Sorry, yes.
Who else is on the call?
Are you there, Jordan?
Are you having proxy?
Right, I know, sir.
Grant will be very conservative. I don't know if he's getting to 5.
Okay, so I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Proposal
is that we schedule a meeting of the that we ask Glenn and to work with ICANN management to come up with a list of all the administrative things that the GNSO Council has to do immediately to give itself its internal infrastructure that it needs, and that even though we have no status to do this, as the people who are going to make up the new GNSO Council, we kind of agree that the GNSO Council will have a meeting very quickly after Sunday simply to approve all these administrative things.
Yeah.
And give it the infrastructure it needs.
Well, let's aim, and I'll confirm this, but let's aim for a meeting 7 days to do that, to give us time to just review what needs to be on that call. And it'll just be an administrative meeting.
And that would be the only agenda item.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
We're not.
That's right, I don't know. Well, probably Thursday next week, does that make sense?
Over the 19th.
My point of view, the sooner the better, simply because.
Yeah, I'll do them the 20th. But that may be a problem for other people.
Well, you can give somebody a proxy. This should be the easiest meeting ever to give proxies for, since it's simply agreeing that the rules of procedure for the Old Names Council apply to the New Names Council, the budget for the Old Names.
I just look at the date.
Yeah, but nominally, and we can confirm that people, we don't think we're going to have enough people able to attend the call, because we still have to, I think, physically attend a call, don't we?
But you could do it by proxy. Somebody could have 8 proxies or something like that. So my only suggestion is the sooner the better, because whatever happens between Sunday and the date of that meeting, you have sort of a little bit of a no-man.
But let's say...
Not, for example, clear, what is your status between those two dates?
So do we make it the Thursday coming up?
I'll take whatever. If I can't be there, I'll give a proxy. Somebody's got to be there.
I can't be there either. So
we can all give proxies.
Can I ask another issue before we close quickly?
Yes.
Okay. This morning, there was a couple of debates over both the task force activities where there was concern about time frames, getting comments back, and that type of thing. And we recognised then that in the new council, the policy development process is shortened considerably. And that, I think, is likely to cause some concern across the first 6 months, because we won't have the staff support that is part of easing some of the burdens in Finland. So I have some concern.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we don't get the staff support.
If we don't get the staff support, won't be able to time frame, and we may need to handle that differently and get some recognition.
Let's deal with that in the next meeting. But just so everyone knows, it is in the transition document recognizing that their concerns have been expressed, the intent is still to go forward with it.
Yes,
so I think in your report in the public forum, perhaps you could mention it as an item of concern that was raised.
Okay, I'll do that. I want to close this meeting off. Thomas, I think you've had a comment to make about the General Assembly.
Well, yes. We're just here at GNSO, which is going to be expected tomorrow, and this also means that the GNSO's General Assembly won't exist anymore. So you will get rid of me as a perpetual guest to your sessions. I am very grateful. Getting rid of operational is it, for example, is maybe you can relatively easily get rid of
the
Which
work is this thing?
What
work do you want the ALS to look at?
We have to look at appointing and appointing a list monitor and ERC long-term strategy seems to be to some at some point of time transfer this with a working ALS but to leave it with the GNSO for the time being.
Right.
It's a simple thing, easy thing to do. But of course nothing would prevent the two organizations from finding a constructive way of making it work.
That's a good point.
So I would recommend, I would guess that whoever will use the ALS reliable should be asked.
And who's the chair of the SetMarch Advisory Committee?
It doesn't exist yet, I can't tell you that.
Okay, that's right.
I just don't have anyone to lead
that.
There
were topic-specific GNS as well. Have they
closed or have they
closed? Louise says instructions that for the moment I'm going to put a little notice on Monday to say that the responsibilities of the GNSO are being, that the old responsibilities of the GNSO are being taken over by the GNSO. But for the moment, not to change anything on the website, and that in time it will.
So Phyllis made a good point. There are a number of things which, even if there was no change from GNSO to GNSO, should be shut down. There, all things.
Archiving, and we have to think of ways of archiving everything.
But maybe Glenn, you should take a look at that and come back to us and say, I want to close these out because they're.
Well,
obsolete.
One thing I'd like to close completely and put in the archives is the CCTLD.
Right.
Can I do that?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
fair. Let's take this offline.
Especially as of tomorrow. Yes. I'll take this offline because there's people that are, it's very early in the morning for some.
Let's wrap it up, guys.
This is what I have to put up with most meetings, James Johnson. That's my revenge. So I thank everybody for having the patience to call in. It has been a long call, but I think we've achieved a lot. And thank all those that attended physically in Amsterdam for this meeting and close it there. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.